This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Mraz. Today's show was unlimited with great moments, laughs, and good takes. Here is the best of today's show.
The NFL networks and the league itself wanted to clear the deck late yesterday afternoon. All of the games stacked in the early window. Only one late game going up against Packers and Bucks. That was the dreadful Jets against the Dolphins. So the NFL and the TV networks wanted to make sure all eyeballs were on Rodgers and Brady, understandably so. Little did we know, by the time we got to the end of the third quarter, we would be furiously searching for things on other channels, namely America's Funniest Home Videos last night. Because by the time we got to the end of the third quarter, the Buccaneers had a stranglehold on this game. The fourth was garbage time. And a Green Bay team that I had claimed was the best team in football going into this game had its pride handed right back to them by the Bucs. Aaron Rodgers, who is playing quarterback as well as anybody in football, after a 10-0 start, was a disaster. Multiple interceptions, a pick six, which started the deluge by the Buccaneers. Sacked, rattled. The Packers' offense was a debacle. After 10-0, it was like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, Freaky Friday. Somebody became Jamie Lee Curtis, the other person became Lindsay Lohan, and never the two shall meet again. And for a team like the Packers to have dominated everybody, they had not won a game by less than a touchdown. They were undefeated coming into yesterday. To not only lose, but to come whimpering back to the sideline as though they just had no answers for a Buccaneers team that had just lost to the Bears. I know the Bears' record's good, but let's be honest. The Bears aren't going to be long for January. For a Bucs team that had looked very mortal over the course of the first 5 weeks of the season at times, the Packers had no answers. None. And it made me wonder, were my thoughts that the Packers were the best team in football and others that put the Packers atop the power standings, were the Packers actually just paper champions? It is where we begin your cold open.
Here's the snap on third and six. Lob pass toward the end zone. Gronkowski, he makes the catch. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. What a great grab by Gronk. Holy Gronkamole.
I think we need a kind of a kick in the ass a little bit as a little bit of a wake up to stop feeling ourselves so much and get back to the things that got us to this position. And I think this would be, unfortunately, but fortunately, something we can really, really grow from.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic, heartrending.
It's DA's top story.
Here he goes!
It's your cold open.
I was Shane Deckerhoff, voice of the Buccaneers on Bucs Radio.
And that was Aaron Rodgers after the game. Okay, so I'm going to take, first of all, glass half full on the pack. They can't play worse than that. And they actually dominated the early part of the game. And it could have been worse than 10-0. And the pack proved they were ready for the fight on the road in this matchup. So when Rodgers says, you know what? We could use this as a positive. we're not going to be feeling ourselves anymore. We need to be grounded a little bit. Okay. But wouldn't that also include Aaron Rodgers? I mean, Rodgers gets into the end zone, or else he thought he did, and starts doing the Key and Peele McCringleberry pelvis thrust celebration. I mean, if anybody was feeling themselves, it would definitely be Aaron Rodgers. He was doing a pelvis thrust celebration to the first quarter of an NFL game. Look, I liked it. Give me more Key and Peele in my end zone celebrations. But still, I mean, Rodgers is the one that's going to be saying, yeah, you know what, we were feeling ourselves a little bit too much, and this should humble us. We'll get better because of this. We probably got to be reminded we're not that good. I mean, I would specifically point to Aaron Rodgers in terms of that. Number two, a ton of credit goes to the Buccaneers because the defense flipped that game. It wasn't necessarily Tom Brady. It was the Bucs defense which solved Rodgers and that Packers offense real quick. After the first couple of drives when the Packers went down the field, that pick six changed everything for that game. Everything. And once that happened, it was like the Bucs had life and their defense just started teeing off. And, you know, this was reminiscent of last year's NFC title game where as soon as the Packers fell behind by a score or two, it was like, okay, we've got nothing. This game is over. We're heading back to the bus. And that worries me about the Packers. They're really good front runners. When things are going well, this includes Aaron Rodgers. And I absolutely love Aaron Rodgers, but this goes to number 12 as well. When things are going well, those guys can sing. I mean, Rodgers specifically throws it anywhere he wants to throw it, looks completely indefensible, and the Packers can be a dominant force. But very obviously, when a good team punches back or a great team punches back, they can go into a hole. They can go into an emotional shell. And I was just thinking early third quarter yesterday how we're all kind of waiting and wanting for Rodgers to put together some type of good drive. I mean, even Buck and Aikman were kind of wanting, longing for Rodgers to make it interesting. He couldn't. And I was just thinking how if the shoe was on the other foot, I mean, Brady just would not have let that get away from them so badly. Brady always, you know, down 14 or down 17 was going to focus and make it the end of the world type of drive. We have to score here. Just to put some pressure on the opposing team and flip it just a little bit. And Rodgers just did it. It was as though Rodgers' soul had been sucked out of his body. And that, to me, is one of the unfortunate truths of Rodgers' career. It is that when he's been great, he's been sublime. I mean, immortal type of great. But when him and the team get behind, it just feels as though all of their energy gets sucked out of the building. And this is not just the last 2 years under Matt LaFleur. This has been a kind of a Packers trend for a long time. And that was what was most disappointing about yesterday. They could have been better than that. They should have been better than that. They are better than that. So are they paper champs? No, I think they're legitimately good. I think, but they ran into a team that punched back and was able to flex their muscle, and they didn't know how to respond. They just didn't know how to respond. And some of Brady's throws yesterday, look, I've taken my shots at 43-year-old Tom Brady. Some of those throws, when the snap is errant in the red zone, it goes low and wide, and Brady has the head about him to keep on the play and to throw a pretty dart for a touchdown. Or the throw to Gronk in the corner of the end zone with a defender draped all over the tight end. Those are just beautiful Hall of Fame throws. Brady was great yesterday when it mattered. Rodgers was not. The Packers shriveled up, and the Bucs defense flexed. That's a big boy win by the Bucs in a big boy way. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Meraz, were you disappointed that once the tide turned against the Packers. They looked so inept. Are you just going to give the credit all to the Bucs for making that happen?
Well, you do have to give the credit to the Bucs, but what really disappointed me was coming out of halftime. When you're down 28-10, that's only an 18-point deficit. The Packers' offense, as they've shown all year, can explode at any turn. And they came out and started that third quarter as if they didn't have a care in the world about coming back in that game. The offense seemed flustered, and I know that Tampa Bay's defense was bringing it. I mean, JPP turning back the clock. But you're only down 18 at half with Aaron Rodgers, and it was as if they had zero halftime adjustment and came out with zero will that they wanted to come back in that game. It was as if they punted on it by halftime. And to me, that's discouraging as a big-time powerhouse team that we were talking about, you know, should be representing the NFC in the Super Bowl. So you get punched in the mouth early, and you can't fight your way back or make anything even competitive, even if you lose the game. To me, that was extremely discouraging from a Packer point of view.
Body language on Rodgers was not good. He was the leader of that. And you're right. I just felt like all of the fight was gone. And it felt very much like the Niners game in the NFC title game last year. Once they got behind, including Rodgers, it was like, okay, not our day. And I know he was in there. He was in the game until the fourth quarter with people finally saying, hey, pull him out of this game. He's getting teed off on. But it wasn't like there was a lot of fire underneath any of the snaps that he took or the throws that he was trying to make. It was like they just got pummeled into submission and they were just going to sleepwalk through the second half of that game. And boy, for what appeared to be the best team in football, I mean, that's not how you fight back against a deficit.
No, it's extremely discouraging. But again, Tampa Bay's defense, man, that's the key, right? Because if Brady could play the way he played yesterday, kind of, you know, mistake-free, and their defense brings the pass rush like that and gets after other quarterbacks, because their defense, you know, while they played the second half last year, the beginning of this year has been suspect so many times. If they could play like that versus elite quarterback play, now we're talking with having enough behind Brady. As you I've highlighted, the warm bosom of the Patriots could be back for Brady if the defense is bringing that.
Look, if that secondary closes on receivers like they did yesterday, if that pass rush is all over the opposing quarterback like it was yesterday, that Buccaneers team has all the parts it needs. Offensively, they're not always going to be great because we've seen Brady take naps this year. We've seen Brady look very bad, very mediocre against the Saints. He looked very mediocre against the Bears as well. Neither one of those teams is right now a powerhouse. So it's not as though the Bucs can't be kind of riddled themselves. But yesterday the pass rush was devastating. And once Bakhtiari went out, it was all hell breaking loose. It was a fire alarm every single time the Bucs wanted to rush. I mean, every time there was a passing down, the Bucs had three guys in the backfield all over Rodgers, which I think gives me a lot of pause about the Packers, a lot, because from an offensive line standpoint, especially if Bakhtiari is injured, that's a disaster. But number two, it really makes you reassess the Bucs, because then that means they don't need 30 points on the board from Brady. It just means that keep them in a game and the Bucs defense can make things happen. And geez, I mean, it was a fire drill. I mean, how many times in the second half yesterday, I know that they had a big lead, so it's easier to pass rush. But even in the second quarter, it was like you had three guys in the backfield every passing down. I mean, that's very impressive from the Bucs.
Yeah, and let's not forget, this was Packers off a bye as well. That
true.
Extra week of preparation off a bye, and the Bucs made them look like that.
True. It was a weird outcome. I mean, it wasn't like the Buccaneers couldn't win this. It was a pick 'em all week long. And early on in the game, when the Packers are dominating, I'm saying, you see, this is why I was questioning why it was Packers only favored by 1 point. This was so weird. To me, it felt like the Packers were the much better team. But clearly Vegas knew that the Bucs defense was going to have a say in this, and the Bucs defense absolutely defined the game. The Braves had a 3-1 series lead. The Dodgers would have to win three consecutive games just to make another World Series after a season in which they were the most dominant team in baseball. It's been an 8-year run for the Dodgers, 8 years of winning the National League West. Only two of those years ended in the World Series up until this one, and they've never actually claimed a World Series championship. And yet, Down 3-1, all seeming lost. The Dodgers came roaring back to force a game number 7. And then last night happened.
2-2, 2 out. Martin's 23rd pitch, Bellinger with a fly ball to right field. Cody Bellinger has just given the Dodgers a 4-3 lead.
I don't want to get too emotional, but I am. But I'm just so proud of these guys. It's been a crazy year. Guys away from their families, social injustices. Our fans are stuck together. These guys are stuck together.
That was Charlie Steiner on Dodgers Radio. That is a teary-eyed Dave Roberts after the game. Hey, let me be the first to apologize to Dave Roberts. On Friday, I said, how can you keep bringing this guy back and expect different results? The Dodgers had been in the World Series only twice in the middle of this 8-year run. It hasn't all been Dave Roberts. There was Don Mattingly years early on in this run. But that the Dodgers year after year would have a dominant regular season and then flame out in the postseason. And it just seemed obvious it was going to happen again. After their bats came alive to win game number 3 to make it a 2-1 series, they had to win game 4. And then the Clayton Kershaw inning happened and Roberts had left them in too long and the bullpen imploded. And the Dodgers just seemed once again destined for an early October exit before their destination, which is winning a World Series. And down 3-1, the Dodgers didn't panic against a very good Braves team. And it's funny, when it was 2-1 and the Dodgers' bats had come alive in Game 3, I said, here come the Dodgers. I wouldn't want to be the Braves. Here come the Dodgers. And then the Braves won that Game 4, and I said, forget it. It's over. They're not going to win this series. The Dodgers are going to do it again. And they took Game number 5. They took Game number 6 and forced a Game number 7. And last night's game was phenomenal. They once again were in a tight affair, back and forth, and then Bellinger's home run is a titanic blast. He comes around the bases and celebrates with a forearm shiver to one of his teammates and pops his shoulder out of the socket. Yes, Bellinger hits a home run to take a lead late in the NLCS Game 7 to go to the World Series and pops his shoulder out of the socket celebrating. He's got to go into the medical area in the dugout, into the team area behind the dugout and get it popped back in, comes back out on the field and catches the final out of the game. An amazing comeback by the Dodgers. Really, truly amazing comeback by the Dodgers, because that's not easy against a good team like the Braves. But they've always had so much talent, and to watch Mookie Betts game-saving catches at the wall, robbing home runs, and the offense coming alive and big hits by Seager and big hits by Bellinger and just big pitching moments as well. You know, we just talked about in the last hour the 3 perfect innings at the end of this game by the Dodgers relief, that the Dodgers were a great team of the regular season. They've been a great team for a while, and they finally showed up when it mattered most, when their backs were against the wall. They have not done this a lot. They've been good front runners, but when they've been facing real adversity in the postseason, oftentimes they have not played well in those spots, and this time they did. So I give the Dodgers credit. I give Dave Roberts credit, because if I'm going to throw him out with the trash when they're down 3-1, I've got to give him a lot of credit when they come back from down 3-1. And the Roberts-led Dodgers are back in the World Series for the first time under him, with a third try to try to win a World Series finally, their first since 1988. On the flip side, I love this Rays team. I've talked about how much I've loved this Rays team. And for some reason, I always felt like they would win this series, even when they were letting a 3-0 series lead melt away. You know, they're up 3-0, and it's 3-1, and you go, well, they're going to close out tonight. We talked about that the other night, and they didn't. And then they're up 3-2, they'll close out tonight, and then they didn't. And then it's 3-3, and all of the pressure is on the Rays. I mean, no team had been down 3-0 and even forced a Game 7 outside of the 0-4 Red Sox. And the Astros were confident, and the Astros were experienced, and the Astros have future Hall of Famers on their roster, and the Astros just seemed poised to finish off this gruesome end to the Rays season. I mean, the Astros have a payroll $100 million more than the Rays. And even in the middle of this game, there are moments where you're going, oh dear, this is where it all falls apart. This is where the Rays are going to give it all up. And yet, you know, it was Tampa Bay who came out of the block swinging. They got the early 2-0 lead. They had built it up to a 4-0 lead, bottom six. The Astros had staged a comeback. It got real dicey late in that game, didn't it? Real dicey in the eighth and ninth innings. But the Rays end up clinching their spot, their second World Series berth ever, with a 4-2 win on Saturday. And I just love this Rays team because they are impervious to all of the things that normally keep and hold baseball teams back. Low payroll, cast-offs, no star players, allowing a 3-0 series lead to become 3-3 in a game seven. They just seem like rules don't apply to them. The normal rules of engagement do not apply. And I just love that team. I love that they've got no stars. I love that they've got no names. I love that they love that they've got no stars and no names. And I'm pulling for them. I also love the fact that the Rays, by virtue of winning Game 7, are forcing Mraz to have his avatar as a Rays fan for yet another week. I love that part of it as well. But I don't know how, if you are just a sports fan, you don't root for the Rays, unless you're kind of like a superficial sports fan that just like the stars, that just like star power because you don't know too much about the games. Because just the Rays story is so incredible. The Rays have the third lowest payroll in baseball, and they've just dispatched two of the four highest payrolls in baseball, back-to-back series, the Yankees and the Astros, and now they'll take on the Dodgers, one of the other highest payrolls in baseball. So if the Rays end up winning the World Series, they would have the 28th highest payroll and would have knocked out three of the top four highest payrolls if they win the World Series. How could you not love that? How could you not love that? I just love their temperament. I love their attitude. I love their ability to game seven to have coughed away three games and still not seemingly have pressure on them. In game seven, they didn't play like they had the pressure on them. They played like it was just another game. And okay, just another chance for us to clinch. We'll do it. We'll clinch. And the types of players that do this for these guys, Arozarena, Zunino, Kiermaier. I mean, it's just like, who are these guys? And it's also sweet justice that the winner in Game 7, the winning pitcher, was Charlie Morton. Because Mraz once upon a time called him, quote, my Uncle Rufus. Charlie Morton, when he was on the Astros, Mraz scoffed at him, my Uncle Rufus. And then Charlie Morton ends up clinching Game 7 to go to the World Series and has a dominant outfit, a dominant effort. And Mraz just has to eat it. I know you don't like the Rays. So does that mean you're now rooting for the Dodgers in the World Series?
Uncle Rufus? Die hard Dodgers fan this week. Die hard. Wearing all the blue, can't get enough. And by the way, Bogish might be able to correct me on this. I believe Charlie Morton has more career either Game 7 wins or winner-take-all wins than any other pitcher in Major League history now.
Uncle Rufus?
He's like 4-0 maybe in Game 7s or something like that.
Is he really that dominant?
He's Mr. Big Game now. Uncle Rufus, who we didn't hear of a couple years ago, now since then, I believe the stat was just 4-0, and it's either Game 7s or if it's combined with the first round, winner-take-alls, and that's more than double however the most wins were. It was like two previously.
Madison Bumgarner with a little dash of Bob Gibson and a little sprinkle of Jack Morris.
The greatest big game pitcher of all time is Charlie Morton, apparently. Uncle freaking Rufus, which is just ridiculous. And yes, I'm a Dodger fan, but how could you have any confidence that the Dodgers, who can't get over the hump ever now, aren't going to implode in a World Series where the bullpen advantage is so much in the favor of the Rays, and they don't care. The Rays don't care who they're playing, who you are, and what your payroll is, and they clearly don't care when they're on the cusp of collapsing a 3-0 series lead. They just get right back off the mat. How could you not have confidence of the Rays winning the series?
Is it amazing that in Game 7 they played like they had no pressure on them? if this was a normal baseball team with a normal baseball season, the pressure on a team that had just coughed up 3-0 would be crushing.
Yeah.
Absolutely crushing. And they were the ones that seemed loosey-goosey in Game 7.
And even when they were, and even when it got to 4-2 and they were choking away and they have this Fairbanks, and he's just sitting there, he has this face of bewilderment. I'm surprised he's not a meme. And he's just delivering strikes and getting out of it. Okay, I'm getting guys on. It doesn't matter. I'm going to get out of it. There's no sense of panic, no sense of overmanaging from Kevin Cash. Oh, he has a runner on. Let me pull him out. He's got this blank stare that you have no confidence in the world, and he gets it done. It's just that that team is the perfect temperament for October. It's ridiculous.
How dare you hate them?
DA, again, for no, I follow the Rays because they're in the Yankees division. They are a dirty team.
Oh,
they are
stop.
A dirty, cheap, and you said this wasn't a word, they're a cheap-shotting team.
It's not
all they
a
do
word.
Is bean people. That this is all they do. They are dirty. That's what started
them,
the whole Yankee thing.
I didn't see them bean anybody in this series
of
against
course,
the Astros.
Of course, because the lights are on now. During the regular season, that's all they do. They try to intimidate you by throwing high in. That's why the Yankees and Rays hate each other, because all they do is hit Yankees, and Chapman finally paid them back. And oh, how could Chapman do that? Well, you guys haven't been paying attention to what's happened the last 3 years. That's why. They're a dirty, dirty team. They play dirty. I don't like them.
Did they throw high against any Yankees in the ALDS?
Yes, they did, actually. Brett Gardner, if you remember correctly. But, of course, that wasn't a lead. So they hate the Yankees, and that's fine. So if they hate us, I'm going to hate them. That's it.
But they didn't throw high in 7 games of the ALCS.
Okay, so maybe it's a Yankee thing. Maybe it's just they're dirty against the Yankees. I don't know what to tell you. All I'm telling you is their history. The lights are on the ALCS. Also, the ALCS is not the time to play dirty. The regular season, when you want to mix it up in May, suddenly you want to pop out your chest. It's a little different in October, DA.
So if people don't have a rooting interest, Rays and Dodgers, they could either side with you and root for the Dodgers or side
yes.
against you and root for the Rays.
So knowing that sentence, if it's as easy as you've laid it out, everybody will be siding with the Rays because we know how this works on this show.
Let's go Rays! Let's go Rays!
Do you want more of that from Dick Vitale? Or do you want the Dodgers to win?
Yeah, when you tweeted that they were a cheap-shotting team. S-H-O-T-T-I-N-G. Shotting is not a thing.
Okay, but how would you say that? How would you formulate that sentence?
All a team they do full is... of cheap shot artists.
You know, see, that's the problem with words, DA. Now I got to add artists to it? That's not artistry as being a cheap shotter. Cheap shotting should just be taken like, yeah, all they do is a bunch of cheap shotting. Cheap shot artists? You want to use that but mock me when I said I was a sandwich artist?
Okay, how about... just saying they take a lot of cheap shots.
That I can live with. If I don't have to use the word artist or artistry, I can live with that. So I'll go back and I'll reformulate that sentence again when they win the World Series. They're a team full of cheap shot. No, wait, what'd you say?
They take a bunch of cheap shots.
Okay. Why can't shotters be a word? Why not? Who made that rule?
Well,
Webster?
Because if you take a lot of shots, you're a shooter. So would you... call them cheap shooters?
I guess that then there comes the question, is a shot different?
Do you consider Steph Curry a great three-point shotter?
You're right. No, you're right. They're cheap shooters. Okay. All right. Lesson learned. They're a bunch of cheap shooters.
You are a dummy.
We talked our way through that, though. We got to that was a good example. That's a good teacher.
The Tampa Bay Rays are a bunch of cheap shooters.
It does sound stupid, but in reality, that's the way you would use it. You're right.
Okay. Hooked on phonics every morning here on the DA Show.
Didn't work for him.
This presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Remember, you can always watch us as well on watchda.com. That's available on any device, anywhere. Watch us if you use the radio.com app. You can watch us within the app. Or on Twitch, we have our own Twitch channel. Watch us there at the CBS Sports Radio channel. We begin with the Cleveland Browns head coach, Kevin Stefanski, getting blown out by the Steelers. He benched Baker Mayfield in the second half. Here's why.
I didn't want to see him get hit one more time, and that's I put that on myself. Went into this game knowing we had to keep him clean, and we didn't do a good enough job, so that starts with me, obviously. And he's a very, very tough player, and I know he wants to fight, but it's a long season. We got a game next week, and I didn't feel like it was the right thing to put him back out there.
We had two examples of this. Teams that were locked in potential playoff matchups and their starting quarterbacks being yanked. We saw Aaron Rodgers yanked at the end of the Packers and Bucks game, and we saw Baker Mayfield yanked at the end of the Steelers game. And it wasn't really even the end. It was midway through the second half. I understand why Stefanski did it. I understand that it makes no sense in a blowout loss to keep your starting quarterback out there getting hit. And I understand, like Matt LaFleur had to decide with Aaron Rodgers against a physical, imposing, good pass rush, why let him take hits? I mean, the Steelers have one of the best defenses in football. But there was also a harsh reality, and that was that when it mattered, Baker Mayfield was once again not up to the challenge. When it mattered, Baker still threw a pick six. When it mattered, the game was still in doubt. Baker Mayfield again threw another INT, which set up a short field goal. When it mattered in this game, Baker looked like he didn't belong. And Pittsburgh has a great defense. But it really gives you pause and makes you wonder, is Mayfield ever going to be good enough to elevate that team against really good teams? Or is he always going to be just a notch below that where, look, this is a good start to the season for Cleveland. They're 4-2. You don't have to apologize for that. But against the two best teams in their division that have owned the division for the better part of 20 years, the Steelers and the Ravens, they've gotten blown out. Their two losses are two blowout losses to the team that they're chasing. So they're good enough to beat teams like the Cowboys, but they're not even good enough to compete with the Ravens or Steelers. And part of that is on Baker Mayfield. He has been bad in those two games. Here is Kirk Cousins, speaking of bad quarterbacking, as the Vikings get pounded yesterday by the Falcons. Here's Cousins.
Kirk Cousins.
You just have to play well, you know, in this business. And the reality is if the pace, you know, that I'm on in terms of the interceptions, if that were to continue, you know, I won't finish the season.
Could you just imagine being a Vikings fan? I talk about the poor people of Minnesota a lot. They just have nothing to root for sports-wise. The Wild in the state of hockey just keeps letting them down. The Timberwolves are always awful. Terrible management. Busted draft picks all over the place. The Twins tease you in the regular season. Can't win game in October. Game. And the Vikings give all of this money to Kirk Cousins, and he gives you this. Just throwing INTs. Terrible squad. I mean, when the Vikings beat you, you fire your coach. That's what the Texans did. Oh, the Vikings beat us, so we have to fire him. You can't survive that. And you've got to root for Kirk Cousins. Kurt Cousins.
Kurt Cousins.
Oh, Ned Flanders.
God said to Noah, build yourself an archy-archy.
The pain of being a Minnesota sports fan. The pain. The pain, bro. The pain. And finally, if you weren't watching Dolphins-Jets, I don't blame you. It was a really ugly affair. But there was a play where one of the Jets' defensive backs falls to the ground as a deep pass falls with him, and he pins the ball to his hip and then butt. He is on his front side on the ground, and he's pinning the ball to his butt. And it ends up being a good interception as the ball never touches the ground. If you were watching Red Zone with Scott Hansen last night, this is how Hansen described it in peak Hansen form.
Did you see this? Here we go. May covering
Preston Williams, hand fighting there, thought he had it there, missed it, hits him in the rump, rolls it on his lower back, back to the cheek, squeezing it with the right hand, back to his back one more time, reaches the other hand behind and says, oh, look what I came up with. Are you kidding me?
Okay. The best part is this. Oftentimes, Scott Hansen seems like he's doing a radio broadcast. No, we're watching. We actually can see all of the things that you're describing right now. But also, he uses both rump and cheek. Rump and cheek. Okay? In that description. Mraz, how do we grade out the use of both rump and cheek doing a highlight?
See, I think rump, to me, is actually the funniest, cleanest way to mention the backside of one's body. So anytime somebody says rump, it's like seeing an animal talking in a car insurance commercial. It's going to get me holding my stomach laughing.
Huh.
And cheek? Look, we all know we have four cheeks, right? So when you reference cheek in a manner of two of them where they're very funny, again, I'm a sucker for that. You know me. Any kind of backside humor, you got me. So I think rump and cheek is, he nailed it, Scott Hansen.
Is it surprising he didn't just say butt?
Well, no, because if you say butt, like just going, oh, it's the butt interception, it's so taboo, right? It's so simple. Going rump,
well,
and
taboo
going
and
cheek,
simple are two different words. But
are they? Okay, well, we won't stumble over that. Cheek and rump, to me, are getting more creative. It's getting inside your thesaurus. It's how can I come up with funnier words? Mm-hmm. And butt is, there's nothing to it. Yeah, butt doesn't make anybody laugh. Rump? Oh, we're holding our stomach.
Well, do you think that Scott Hansen doesn't say butt there because he thinks that it's maybe a little offensive, that rump and cheek are more proper?
Scott Hansen goes loony sitting there for 8 hours every single Sunday. I'm sure he's just trying to get creative, have a little fun. How boring would it be, oh, it touches his butt, he holds it around. No. Giving you a rump is, it's a rump. You know what I mean? He's more into saying rump. I think he says butt at home all the time, my guess would be. It's the rump now that gets more funny and more creative. He's an entertainer. Hey.
There's also a part of this interception where Scott Hansen gets really excited. It's right at the beginning where he goes, did you see this? And his voice goes like three octaves higher. He's really excited about this interception. Really, really excited.
I kind of miss
Scott
Hansen.
Don't forget, too, guys, in that window, they only had Packers, Bucks, and that Jets game. So he must have been going nuts from 4:30 on yesterday. So, and that game was already done at that point. So anything noteworthy is going to get his best effort from the Jets Dolphins yesterday.
Did you see this?
That is your sound check. Red Zone had itself a day yesterday. There are two different Red Zone channels, one for DirecTV subscribers, one for everybody else. The one for DirecTV subscribers has Andrew Siciliano, who has hosted every episode of it, every week of it since 2004, I believe, or 2005. Yesterday was the first time he has missed a week of Red Zone because he had tested positive for COVID, I think, earlier in the morning. He had negative tests up until then, but then a positive, which is interesting that Red Zone is testing these guys every single day. That's kind of amazing. I mean, you think CBS Sports Radio is doing that with us? Hell no. So Siciliano tests positive.
No, they let Jody Mack come to work every day for 3 years.
Yeah, can we test for black
lung? There's a guy with a leaf blower. There's a guy with a leaf blower in our vestibule just airing you, blowing you clean of germs on your way in. That's good enough.
I mean, seriously, NFL Network and Red Zone has a way higher budget and standards than we do. So that's the first part of it.
You feel good? Yep, come on in.
Come on in.
Here's a survey.
Mraz goes into the office like one time every 4 months. He's like, do I need a hazmat suit? No, you're fine with that swab. Just wipe down the desk. You should be fine over there. Yeah. Meantime, Siciliano's getting tested every 2 hours like he's inside the NBA bubble.
Here's a one-ply paper towel and Costco brand Lysol. Have at it.
Wipe it down yourself, Mraz. Yeah.
Eat the wipe. That'll be good enough.
Yeah, every day – Bilotti shows up to work looking like Homer Simpson at the nuclear factory, where he has like that giant suit on and he's holding things with gloves.
Now I glow.
Yeah, now Bilotti's been at the office so long he's glowing now. So Siciliano tests positive, which means they've got to put Dan Helly into the mix. So Helly ends up getting the first red zone replacement start in 15 years. And then the late NFL schedule is clearing the deck for Rodgers, Brady, Packers, and Bucks, which means there's only one game on against them, which is Jets and Dolphins. And so once the Packers and the Bucks became a blowout, there was nothing to show for red zone. They had like an hour and a half of doing sideline interviews from guys earlier in the day. I saw an interview with Derrick Henry, an interview with Minka Fitzpatrick. I mean, they never do that because there's always some action going on in the late window. They had nothing. They're just running highlights of the earlier games. They're showing like 15 uninterrupted minutes of a terrible Jets and Dolphins game. I mean, it was a rough day. I mean, so you're right, Mraz. Scott Hansen's got to go crazy because one fun thing happened in the Jets and Dolphins game.
It's unbelievable. I'm actually shocked you even went red zone at that point. We had both games in New York, and it was dreadful. I made a big ice cream run in the third quarter of Bucks Packers. Once I saw Rodgers was tapping out, I said, enough of that. I got to get some crumb cake ice cream in me.
What? So you got crumb cake ice cream?
Well, see, what happened, I got another apple pie, third straight week with an apple pie with all these farm visits, which I'm done. I've enough with the farms. Uh-huh. Had another apple pie. Had no ice cream when I opened a freezer. So there's a local, you know, fancy ice cream place, and they make this great crumb cake ice cream. So I said, we're going to do the crumb cake on the apple pie. We're going to get real creative here. I was
going to
wait
till after. What's a crumb cake ice cream? Does it have crumb cake in it?
Yeah, like crumb cake crumbles within the ice cream. It's like a homemade ice cream parlor.
So it's a vanilla ice cream with crumb cake in it?
Swirled in kind of deal, a little cinnamon flavor to it. So we were throwing that on the apple pie.
Oh,
so I was going to wait till after the Bucks-Packers game, and obviously the Jet game was over. I made the run, got there, got right back on my couch for the time Tua was checking in, but I never do that during a window, but every game was out of hand, so there was no need for red zone for me. I had to get that ice cream. It was a quick 10-minute trip. In the midst of
now,
it, by the way, it should be noted, I did hear Rich Ackerman doing the Eye on Football with Jody Mack. That's a heck of a duo on Sundays on CBS Sports Radio.
Ack it's not it. New, Mraz. This has been going on for 8 years.
Ack was making a huge case during that blowout of why the Bucs are the best team in the NFC and pointed to their wins now over the Packers and the Saints. I did have to text Ack and remind him. I know you might be going crazy next to Jody Mack. The Bucs did not win that game one
good job.
Win. And I was getting texts from
Ack. I have my eye on football.
I got texts from Ack till like midnight going, I can't believe I made that mistake on the air.
So Mraz left the couch on an NFL Sunday for the first time in 9 years to finally hear our programming. And the one thing that he heard was the host mistakenly saying that the Bucks beat the Saints.
Good show.
Right. What are you saying this morning, Chief?
That's that's like Mike and Amanda, Jody Mack and Ack. That's a great Sunday show. That combo, what better can you get? You guys are all watching Red Zone. You got to get with Ack and Jody. They're taking it flying around. We got guys in Tampa. We got guys in Miami. Everything's happening. Jordan Rodriguez previewing the Rams game. We got a lot going on.
You need to be listening to that because you didn't even know that they did the show. I did know that they did the show.
That's a power couple.
And chose not to listen.
That's a power couple. That's a good Sunday.
Number two, I'm with you because, in fact, I was driving one of the weeks earlier in the football season, and I really wanted an update on the games. And I was only getting ESPN radio on my radio, and they're just talking about games. They're not giving you any updates. It's really maddening. They're only discussing, like, in-depth analysis of games that already happened. And I'm like, no, I want updates of what is happening. I'm like, I need Eye on Football. So I had to pop on the radio.com app. Boom, Eye on Football. I had Ack and Jody Mack giving me going live out to sites, giving me score updates. It's way better because I can get analysis anywhere. What I need is live updates of what is happening in the games. And Eye on Football delivers it.
So there you go. Two blowouts, 4 o'clock window, leads to crumb cake ice cream on apple pie, leads to Ack and Jody being discovered. That's a big late window in the NFL yesterday.
Rich Ackerman.
Let me tell you, if
Jody
ever,
finally discovered.
If there was ever a need for a afternoon drive tandem on some major affiliate somewhere.
Oh, lock them up.
Mac and Ack.
Mac and Ack? You even got the name for the programming. Get this guy a PD job. He's thought about it. Mac and Ack. And by the way, one guy who can't stop coughing and the other guy who hates germs. That, to me, just throw it on TV as well.
The Odd Couple.
All right.
Perfect.
What CBS Sports Network showing yesterday? Bull riding? Get those two on a camera all day shooting around.
That's right.
I don't want to blow your mind, but there used to be a show on satellite radio with Jody Mack and a guy named Brian McGovern, and they were the Mack and Mack Sports Attack. Wow. There's a lot going on with that name.
Wow. Well, oh. Mack and Mack Attack. Wow.
4227.
All right.
Smiling like Little Mo every morning. It's a momentous Monday.
Every day can be a better day despite the challenge. All you gotta do is leave it better than you found it. It's gonna get difficult to stand but hold your balance. I just say whatever cause there is no way you're found it.
I just think people should know that if you stay positive, everything will be fine. You just eat, drink, and breathe positive thoughts. That's all you gotta do, and everything will be good.
So on Saturday, it was an ugly day for Syracuse football as they got pounded by the Liberty Flames, which certainly was not what they intended, as Liberty has been a recent addition to the FBS level, and they went to the Carrier Dome and got an easy victory. But in that game, there was an inspiring story for the Orange. That was their quarterback, Rex Culpepper, who was starting in place of the injured Tommy DeVito. Culpepper has long locks. He has long hair. Almost looks like a Trevor Lawrence type of hair. And the reason is that Rex Culpepper lost all of his hair due to chemotherapy. As a young man, he dealt with testicular cancer. And so he lost all of his hair. And the moment that his chemo was done, he began growing his hair again. So the reason he has these long flowing locks is he has not cut his hair since his chemo was over. He ended up beating it, which is amazing. But he also has a number of stripes tattooed on his body, which is every day that he had chemo treatment. A reminder, there's a dash on his side for every one of those days. He is such a bright kid. He is such a well-liked kid. He's such a smart individual that the team loves him. The coaches love him. But Rex Culpepper is a guy that probably never was supposed to have a chance to even start at the Division I Power Conference level after what he went through, overcoming testicular cancer at that age and really going through a brutal couple of bouts of chemotherapy. But Rex did it, and through the injury to the starting quarterback was the starting quarterback on Saturday and will likely be so the rest of the season for Syracuse. So an amazing story of just remaining positive and remembering that there are always brighter days ahead. And as dark as it might seem, you can overcome it. And I thought that was such a cool story that Culpepper ended up getting a start under center at quarterback for an ACC team after what he had gone through from a health situation that really left quite an indelible mark, obviously, on his life. Culpepper's also one of these crazy talented athletes that also plays the piano. And he's just a really smart individual as well in terms of, you know, his education and as a student. So cool to see him, even if he took the loss on Saturday. Every Monday, we do a little inspirational sports story in honor of Little Mo. You can hit us up on Twitter, DA on CBS. Again, DA on CBS. Dixieland Dan tweets, DA, I don't know who the hell that Dennis guy was that tweeted you a million times last night, but you need to let that guy know that I'm the only D-Alien that tweets the show 30 times. That's my territory. Step off, or I'm going to send my pet attack raccoon to take care of some business. Hashtag get him out. Dennis told us, or at least tweeted me last night, that the girls in his family, in his household, love Bogues, that he's trying his best to tone it down. But we don't have any details of if the girls are, you know, young girls, if they, like, look at Bogues like he's the Beatles, if these are older women. and he's like their pool boy. We don't know exactly the context here. Rob the 321 says, I don't know. I think I'm the guy that tweets you guys even more than that. Mraz, if you had to pick Dixieland Dan or Rob the 321, who tweets more at you?
Probably Rob in the 321. But maybe that's just because, frankly, he annoys me a lot more than Dixieland Dan does when he tweets me.
It's Didn't Rob tell you to stand down? Didn't he tell you to take a lap?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what really has set me off. I've really soured since. And now he's DMing me all the time. It's just relax. Everybody just let's relax.
By the way, speaking of the D-Aliens, I saw that Moose, not Mark Malusis, but our listener Moose, our faithful listener, was back on the grind doing Up the Gut Foods this week on Instagram.
He was. He made the Dr. Pepper pulled pork sliders, which you missed when your power outage went out on Friday. And apparently they came out great. He got himself a pork shoulder. He got in there and he slow cooked them and he loved them.
So you put a pork shoulder in the slow cooker and then put a can of Dr. Pepper in there?
Two cans Dr. Pepper. Can't be the diet because you need the sugars. Jar of whatever your favorite barbecue sauce is, couple spices you want in there. 10 hours slow cooking. The sugars and the cherryness from the Dr. Pepper soak into that pork with the barbecue. Fantastic.
I love Dr. Pepper. I don't drink Dr. Pepper a lot, but I do love Dr. Pepper when I do have it. It's just so delicious on like a hot summer day. So I kind of like this play. And then do you put, I know you were a big Hawaiian bun guy for pulled pork. Is that where you're going to put this?
Yes. The Hawaiian roll sliders. Yes. King's Hawaiian. Oh man. Now I want them again.
Okay. Oh. Dr. Pepper pulled pork sliders. How about that?
And the Giants didn't lose to Washington.
Allen calls out signals. Takes the snap. He's back. He's flush to his left. He's running. Looking to run. Now stops. Now under pressure. Throws it in the end zone. Incomplete.
Sean, is that you doing PA?
Yeah, it's Eagle fans, get up. It's third down.
I mean, that's the best the Giants can do is have the PA guy that loud and clear in the back of a Bob Papa crucial call yesterday.
Hey, look, no fans. You got to get you take it. Bogus, I'm surprised you didn't have this nugget, by the way. I figured this is right up your alley. Giants, first home team to win at MetLife since the Guardians did it the last weekend in February.
Oh, come on. Come on, is that right?
Yes. The last home football team to win at MetLife, the end of February, the New York Guardians.
That was the last New York football win.
Yes. Yes.
The last time a New York football team won was the Guardians in April. A league had gone defunct. The Rock had bought the league before a New York football team got a win.
That last Sunday in February. That was it, folks.
Oh, God. So putrid.
In
so
front of the same amount of people, by the way.
That's right, yeah. So I think that I think the PA guy was left over from the Guardians. They're like, all right. You can grandfather you in. So, Mraz, are you excited about a win, or are you hoping for a worse draft?
Of course he is. He's Mraz. He's in the, they're in the Super Bowl now.
Better draft pick.
No, because I like Daniel Jones, so I know they're not outclassing the Jets for Trevor Lawrence. So to me, the draft pick's irrelevant. At some point, you got to win some games. And it's a big one Thursday night. If they beat the Eagles, the Giants, suddenly their schedule breaks where they should be 5-6 after 11 games.
Oh, come on.
Look at the schedule, boys. Look at the schedule. They got a Monday night versus the Bucs, which is their only seeming loss coming up here, as long as they take care of the Eagles.
So, yeah, I would say that seems like a loss.
They got the Bengals. They got the Browns. There's a lot of things breaking the Giants' way now. They're back in the division hunt with a win Thursday night.
They'll lose to the
Sean,
Browns.
Sean, the last time you looked at the schedule was with the Niners and a third of their roster there, and they got embarrassed.
Yeah, nice. Humiliated. I know how that sounds, and I know how bad they are. My point is, if they win Thursday night, now they've got a winning streak. You never know. Maybe they've turned things around under Joe Judge. Things are in play here now. The division is broke for them.
No. Definitely not in play. But do we agree with Ron Rivera going for it for two?
Stupid decision.
He could have kicked the extra point and played for overtime. He said he goes for two, doesn't get it, and then loses.
Right. The Giants were on their heels. It was ridiculous. They could have won that game in overtime. And also, you are still in the division hunt as well. Ron Rivera would have won. The whole point of going to Kyle Allen, remember, was that the division stunk and you wanted to have it. So why would you basically take a chance of throwing away a game on one play where you know that the Giants aren't good enough offensively to go down the field and score a touchdown on you that first drive?
Yeah, I think my problem problem here was that if Washington has this situation against the Packers or the Bucks, or they have the situation right. against a team that's obviously superior, and you're going, look, we can't hold on to this lead, or we can't hold on to this game in overtime. The longer this game goes, it's obvious we'll lose. We got to go for the win now. I could understand being aggressive. But it's against the Giants. You've basically played to a draw to this point in time. And as you just said, Mraz, you have already claimed that the season matters, which is why you went to Kyle Allen, that you're still in the division hunt. So you could definitely outlast the Giants in OT. It's not going to take much to do that. Why go for all for broke? And then the play itself was just... I don't know if it was a play call or as a botched execution, but it was a disaster. There was nothing open as Kyle Allen rolled left.
And also, enough with Kyle Allen. He stinks. He absolutely stinks. I know you like him, D.A. He's awful. If you're going to lose like this, there's two decisions. You either play Dwayne Haskins and see if you have anything, or you play Alex Smith because at least you got a good freaking story behind it. You can't tell me Alex Smith is worse than Kyle Allen. Kyle Allen is the worst of the three on the bingo card to be playing right now if you're Washington. What the heck is Rivera doing?
It does not seem like Alex Smith could be worse than Kyle Allen.
There's no way. There's absolutely no way. And at least there's a little inspiration behind. Give us something to hold on to. It's been a, you know, it's been a rough year in Washington, too. Give us Alex Smith for a good story.
Which do you think, historically speaking, will look like a worse call by me? Do you think it'll be Mike Glennon could be an NFL quarterback, or I like what I see in Kyle Allen?
It's still Mike Glennon. Because at least there were 2 weeks there with Kyle Allen where I think everybody kind of agreed, okay, wow, they're winning games. You just hung on to Kyle Allen too long. Like, everybody knew when to abort the Kyle Allen ship. You walked in the room, the party room, that 1 week, and you were the only one left and went, wait, where'd everybody go with Kyle Allen? We were off. Mm-hmm. But your Glennon thing, no matter how many losses and how awful he looked, every week you kept going out, oh, you get him in a good situation. I'm telling you, this guy's going to be good. He's Rich Gannon.
I don't know if I ever called him Rich Gannon. I know I never said, oh, like Tarzan. But did Mike Glennon ever get in a good situation? I mean, honestly, he was a Bear. He was a Buck. What else was he? Was he a Jet?
I don't think he was a Jet. And I'm forgetting, was he like a Lovie Smith Buck? And he bailed for Winston? And then he ended up a Bear, and he lost out to Trubisky, if I have that correct?
I think you're
That's
right.
That's definitely
true.
He
was a Buck. They went to Winston. He had one good season. He went 4-9, threw 19 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. I thought
Time
he was
out.
Decent
Time
after
out.
That.
He had one good season, followed by he went 4-9.
Well, I don't want to blame...
You see, he's still doing it, guys.
I don't want to blame the Bucks' problems all on Mike Glennon because he had a 19-9 touchdown interception ratio. Then they turned to Jameis Winston, so he left and he went to Chicago. Then he lost to Trubisky. Then he went to Arizona and backed up whoever was there in 2018 because that was before Rosen, right?
No, maybe it was Rosen.
That was the Rosen year? He backed up Rosen then, and last year he backed up Derek Carr in Oakland, and now I think he's out of the NFL.
By the way, can you tell that Bucks-Packers was a terrible game? Because we've covered the 1994 wildcard round and Mike Glennon's career on this Football Monday. We had big plans, folks. We really
yeah,
we had big plans.
We had the best intentions this morning.
We've got two more games here this week. Bills and Chiefs at 5 Eastern, Cowboys-Cardinals then at 8:15. Coastal Carolina football ranked for the first time ever.
Chanticleers.
Won at number 21 Louisiana last week. Now, they've only been an FBS program, I think, since 2017, 2016. So it's not the longest history, but here goes number one in the top 25. The list again begins with Clemson and Alabama. Texas A&M gets into the top 10 at number 8 after beating Mississippi State. Baylor football back at practice yesterday after its latest COVID outbreak. They had 42 positives between players and staff. Baylor couldn't play last weekend, scheduled for Texas this weekend. And Doc Emrick retiring after decades as the voice of the NHL. The 74-year-old says it is time to do some traveling. And now, a new week of Stunned begins.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
If you are alive and you've been to a mall or an airport, you have at least seen a Panda Express, actually eaten at one.
Who now, hasn't eaten Panda Express? To me, I'm calling BS if you say I've never eaten a Panda Express. Everybody's had it at least once.
That two meat combo is the best thing going in a mall.
Not bad.
The company was born in California in 1973. It now has over 2,000 stores and apparently $35 billion in revenue last year. To a large extent, Panda Express has created what Americans think is Chinese food.
Oh, I want Chinese food now.
I know, but this might be the problem. The first Panda Express in China has now opened. The menu includes the famous Kung Pao chicken, General Tso's, and tangerine peel chicken. And since those aren't true Chinese dishes, early reviews are at 3.5 out of 5 stars. People that have eaten American Panda Express, and this was not even that good to begin with. So the question is, are there Pizza Huts in Italy? Like, what a terrible decision this is. You can't put Panda Express in China and expect people to eat it.
Well, and also, I don't even know if Pizza Huts in Italy is the right connector, because I don't even think that Pizza Huts are trying to be Italian. They're just trying to be, like, dopey American food. But Panda Express fancies itself as Chinese food.
And, for Americans.
Right, Chinese food for Americans.
Olive Garden in Italy.
Could you imagine stepping off the plane in China? Like, you can't wait for an Anthony Bourdain experience where you have, like, this amazing, off the side of the road, unbelievable Chinese food with the noodles and the shrimp or the chicken and the flash fried and the sauces. And you're like, I can't wait for this Chinese food experience because I love Chinese food. I mean, I love it. And then you end up seeing the neon lights of Panda Express and be like, yep, that's my Chinese dinner tonight. What a disgrace. If you go in there, you are a total disgrace.
I'm going to defend fatties and poor food for a second.
No.
Because in China, their Chinese food is just food. Like, that's what they eat, right? That's their culture of food. So I think Panda Express is just that dumb American twist on it. And it's kind of like we live in New York, and we've all been there after quite a few beers where you just want Domino's, right? Or Pizza Hut. And it's stupid because it's not as good as the regular pizza, but it's...
I've never said that. No, in New York, if you eat Domino's in New York City specifically, or anywhere around New York, you're a bozo.
You haven't been to enough keg parties when it's delivered late night at 1 a.m. My point is...
But if you could prefer or opt for pizza, you would never opt for Domino's. It's just in front of you. That's different than opting for it.
I think you opt for it because sometimes you just want the fake stuff. And I think that there's room for that in China, where sometimes you just want the fake tangerine chicken from Panda Express because it tastes good and it's different than the normal stuff you used to. So I think there's an avenue there. I do think it involves alcohol.
Let me ask you this, okay? Let me ask you this, Mraz. If I flew you right now to Mexico City and there was this incredible... There was this incredible, like, jalapenos restaurant, this Salsa de la Cruz restaurant, and there were these little taco street trucks, and there was all these options. And then there was a Taco Bell. Would you walk into the Taco Bell?
No, I'm in Mexico. I'd want to try that other food.
Cheesecake Factory. Oh, sorry.
No, I love Cheesecake Factory. But remember, I'm the same person that told you when I went to Cancun, their Mexican was awful. I couldn't wait to have Chipotle when I came back, and it was better than anything I had. I also don't think if we fly to China, we're not the ones going to Panda Express. I think it's there for those who live there to want a cheaper Americanized version for it. It's a little different for them.
Could you imagine being in Mexico City and seeing somebody, a local, walk into a Taco Bell? You'd be like, no, don't do that. It's terrible.
Yes, I get how it appears, but it's still, sometimes you want the fake version. That's all I'm saying. Sometimes fake is just what you're in the mood for. It happens to me. I've ordered a Chuck E. Cheese pie before, because sometimes you just want the fake.
But I think what you're missing in this example is that there is no tangerine peel chicken in China that Panda Express has then, like, bastardized in America. This is not a cheap version of what people in China normally eat. These are
so maybe now they
American
like tangerine peel chicken bogus because
Chinese
they haven't been affiliated
with
it. They might like it. It's something different.
That's an argument for Mraz's side, because if there is no tangerine peel chicken, and I love tangerine peel chicken,
then if that's the only way that I can get it when I'm in Shanghai, then I might need to go to Panda Express because it is delicious. But I think that there's got to be a bazillion other dishes at the Noodle Hut next to that Panda Express, or the restaurant next to Panda Express, or the other three places next to Panda Express that are way better than Panda Express's tangerine peel chicken.
Now, ultimately, I do have to bring up the hypocrite that is DA. DA, do you care to share with the class your favorite chain restaurant, please? Don't lie. I know the answer to this.
Oh, yes, P.F. Chang's.
Guy loves P.F. Chang's. He lived in Brooklyn, New York City, could get to Chinatown at any point, and couldn't get enough of P.F. Chang's. And now he's telling me nobody will go to Panda Kitchen. In China? Come on.
Well,
you do the same thing. Sometimes you want fake. You want those lettuce wraps.
First of all, to be fair, Chinatown is not exactly the safest place to go eat. And I'm not talking about my
You
my
took
health
us there for a Christmas dinner. Now it's not safe?
And it was good. Daylight. No, I'm saying what you eat is, you know, you're taking your life in your own hands based on where you eat and health codes and stuff like that.
Of course.
So going into a P.F. Chang's is oftentimes a very sterilized, cleanly, I can trust this experience. But is it better than Chinatown? It is not better than Chinatown. No, it is never better than Chinatown.
Of course, and that's the point. Panda Kitchen's not better than regular Chinese food in China, but even you would care to prefer the fake sterile environment. There's got to be room for somebody in Hong Kong to love the sterile environment of a Panda Kitchen.
Here's the thing. Panda Express, when you're at the airport, is such a good hit. It is such a good hit because you don't want anything too greasy. You don't want anything too heavy because you don't know, as we've always said, turbulence or the pressure of the cabin. Things happen at 30,000 feet. Panda Express is such a safe, good option. Also, you get two different dishes. So you want a little bit of lo mein, and you get a little bit of the chicken fried rice or shrimp fried rice. You get a little bit of lo mein, you get a little bit of the tangerine peel chicken. It's really good. And rice also, I think it stabilizes the stomach. You know, if you go up in the air and you are worried about your own personal turbulence, to me, any type of rice, it glues everything together. It's to me, it's like a good offensive line. You just know it's going to stabilize your quarterback play and your running back.
Well, on that note.
855.
With bacon.
Oh, with bacon.
With bacon.
Who needs Chinese food today, including myself?
Me.
I'm in. If we were in studio together, I would say, guys, we're going to eat Chinese food right now.
Follow me to P.F. Chang's.
follow me to freedom. Okay, so, Bogues, you're not in on the Chinese route today.
No, I'll have Chinese food. I'm still just stuck on the validity of a Panda Express in, like, in the heart of China. People looking at it going, really? Like, I'm just going to go two doors down, but all right.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the Mothership's Advanced Analytics.
So the Jets right now are cruising to the number one pick overall after getting slapped around by the Dolphins yesterday. And our question is, if you want Trevor Lawrence as the number one pick in the draft, is it safer to keep Adam Gase employed until the end of the season? 77% of you say, yes, keep Adam Gase if you want the number one pick in the draft. Don't rock the ship here. Don't rock the boat. Once the Texans fired Bill O'Brien, they won a game. Once the Falcons fired Dan Quinn, they won a game. You don't want to ruin a good thing here. Keep losing. Keep Gase employed. The Jets right now have a 57% chance to earn that number one overall pick in the draft, according to ESPN Sports Analytics. Gase is one of three coaches to be shut out by a former team after the 24-0 shutout yesterday. Dennis Erickson was shut out in 04 by the Seahawks, and Ron Meyer in 87 with the Colts was shut out by the Patriots. Erickson had moved on to the 49ers by then. So earlier this morning, we found out that yesterday's Packers and Niners game was such a snooze fest that Mraz actually left the couch to go grab himself some ice cream during the game. And in doing so, happened to flip on this little thing called CBS Sports Radio. And he happened to learn for the first time since we debuted more than 8 years ago what the weekend programming is, which has been very stable and consistent. The same thing since 2013. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Mraz left the couch on an NFL Sunday for the first time in 9 years to finally hear our programming. And the one thing that he heard was the host mistakenly saying that the Bucs beat the Saints.
Good show. Right. What are you saying this morning, Chief?
That's a, you know, that's like Mike and Amanda, Jody Mackinac. That's a great Sunday show. That is, I mean, that combo, what better can you get?
And I'm going to be a crotchety old you-know-what if I last another 40 years.
You guys are all watching Red Zone. You got to get rid of Ack and Jody. They're taking you flying around. We got guys in Tampa. We got guys in Miami. Everything's happening.
You need to be listening to that because you didn't even know that they did the show. I did know that they did the show.
That's a power couple.
And chose not to listen.
That's a power couple. That's a good Sunday. So there you go. Two blowouts, 4 o'clock window leads to crumb cake ice cream and apple pie, leads to Ack and Jody being discovered. That's a big late window in the NFL yesterday.
Rich Ackerman.
Let me tell you, if
Jody
ever
finally discovered.
If there was ever a need for a afternoon drive tandem on some major affiliate somewhere, Mac and Ack.
Mac and Ack? You even got the name for the programming. Get this guy a PD job. He's thought about it. Mac and Ack. And by the way, one guy who can't stop coughing and the other guy who hates germs. That, to me, just throw it on TV as well.
The Odd Couple.
All right.
Perfect.
What CBS Sports were showing yesterday? Bull riding? Get those two on a camera all day shooting around.
That's right.
I'd love to see Mraz get smacked by sausage and peppers.
I don't want to blow your mind, but there used to be a show on satellite radio with Jody Mack and a guy named Brian McGovern, and they were the Mack and Mack Sports Attack.
Boom! Pop goes the Weasel.
Wow. There's a lot going on with that name.
Wow. Wow. Oh. Mack and Mack Attack.
4227.
All right.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
So the first big outcome of yesterday's action was that Mraz actually, for the first time in a decade, got off the couch on a Sunday and left live football. The second big thing was the bet is apparently more alive than we thought. If the Patriots finish with a bottom three record in the NFL, I lose. If they finish with better than that, Mraz loses. And what's on the table, what's at stake, is us dressing up as an American Patriot with some type of Ben Franklin or Paul Revere costume, reading from a scroll, the script that the other person writes, and getting beaned by dodgeballs from a short distance. If it's really bad, like if the Patriots are outside of the top 10, I get to pour hot New England clam chowder on Mraz's head. Right now, after that dispiriting loss to the Broncos, the Patriots, by my rudimentary math, are the 11th pick in the NFL draft. The 11th. So they're just outside of the top 10. So once upon a time, it looked like they could be a top five team in the NFL. Right now, it looks like, again, they're right around the 11th pick of the NFL draft. Mraz, you're still alive. If Cam Newton looks that bad, and we saw what Jarrett Stidham looked like, you're still alive.
Right, and the Giants and Falcons appear back, so they're going to shoot up right there with a couple wins, have the Pats lose a little more. Suddenly things are breaking our way, D.A.,
it's just hard for me to imagine that between the Jets, the Vikings, either Washington or the Giants, or whatever that Eagles team is, or the Jaguars, that you're going to find a bottom three spot for the Pats.
Injuries happen, DA. Injuries happen. A lot of football left.
That'll do it for us this morning here on the DA Show. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer. Thanks to Pete the Body Bilotti on the Wheels of Steel and audio director. Thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headline. It's at Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. Be good and be good to one another. Trash Tuesday tomorrow. We'll see you then. The Mothership disconnects.
T
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.